Dawn Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT and the free Odyssey app.
How are you going? This is an enormous amount of stress on you since the last time I talked to you.
Yeah.
You have every problem in the world weighing down on you, and you've been very active with Maduro, with Iran, trying to sort Ukraine out, the economy, energy. How are you managing to bear all of that?
So there is President Trump. This is making big news this morning. A lot going on. Secretary of State Marco Rubio, he continues to answer questions about his budget, about Iran. We played him for you yesterday. And so much breaking, so much developing. Hi, Dawn Senslin back here. Dan Borowski, our executive producer. Are we gonna do, because Linda, the lovely Linda, has a great announcement.
Oh, well, I don't want to step on Linda's toes, but I do think it would be better if maybe we waited till after this. We have to take another short break.
So we'll do a tease.
Minutes. Yes.
So we have, thanks to Linda Kern's friend, who is very famous, we have a wonderful interview guest joining us at the top of the hour, moments away. So we're very excited for this today. And the lovely Linda Kern's.
Good morning, Dawn.
Hey, Linda.
Dan was supposed to tell you, so
we've had so much. I have to defend.
No, I mean,
it's been crazy today. We have had the craziest breaking news.
I mean, hey, I think we're going to have that as long as your buddy Trump is in office, Dawn.
Linda brings us this huge guest. I don't tell Dawn. I text Linda last night. She says, the highlight of my week. I say the low light of mine.
I know. I'm not really. Yeah.
Like, Linda, I'm so sorry. Much love to you.
Dan, you have all the information.
It's been a tough couple of days.
Sent you all the information to get the guests, so
I have that.
And we do have...
You can say who the guest is. I'm sorry. I thought we were teasing like some big announcement of like...
Well, that's right.
You're changing careers.
No. Nobody's changing. I will say last night, I didn't get home till it was like 10:30 at night because I was out in Montgomery County, King of Prussia area. This incredible ceremony with our great local Abington police chief, Patrick Malloy, who I had on yesterday, but he was, you know, sworn in. It was a big to-do, and the who's who list, if you will, of law enforcement and local leadership as he was sworn in as the president of the Pennsylvania Police Chiefs Association, which is quite an honor and a big, powerful position that he takes on working with law enforcement across the state. So the Commonwealth of PA. So I was out late, too. So maybe that was part of the... But congratulations, Chief Malloy. You're just a great, great human being. My favorite line, and Linda, you would have loved it, because he said how he was raised in this big Irish Catholic family. He was the eighth of 10 children in the Malloy family, so he had a lot of family there, too. And he talked about the fact that his parents, what was most important was not financial success, but that they would be spiritual millionaires.
Wow.
And I love, isn't that spiritual millionaires to be people who serve? And so, of course, it's no surprise that he ended up serving and protecting our community all these years, and thanked first and foremost his wife, Carolyn, and his two sons, but his wife, Carolyn, saying, thank you so much for holding down the fort all those years being a cop. You know, being the one at home, worried, and being with the boys. And so it was really a lovely evening.
Yeah, that's definitely a profession where the whole family sacrifices.
Yes. Amen. Amen, sister. So we have an incredible guest. No, it's not Elvis Presley, although we love Elvis. Linda loves Elvis.
Do we?
But we have a great guest for you. Oh, what a treat. This is really special. It makes my Wednesday. Other than Linda makes our Wednesday,
thank
of course.
You.
The lovely Linda.
Dawn Senslin from Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
I'm so honored this morning to have my dear friend, the great, the one and only Linda Kern's, who's a voice of reason here, our loved lawyer, family lawyer, and election integrity attorney as well. And now, thanks to Linda, we have an award-winning journalist, highly respected, just an incredible voice and an incredible ladylike voice. But with the inside story of Justice Samuel Alito, his powerful role in shaping the Supreme Court, what a riveting book that was really an instant New York Times bestseller, Alito, the Justice Who Reshaped the Supreme Court, Restored the Constitution. It's my honor to welcome in to the Dawn Show, Molly Hemingway.
Well, it's great to be here with you. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. And we thank Linda Kearns. And Linda, we'll talk about the event that Linda's event that we'll be at tonight.
Hi, good morning, Molly.
Hello. I'm also a huge fan of Linda. I think I'm a charter member of the Linda Kearns fan club.
Well, Molly, before we talk about your Alito book, I want to tell you a story that actually might make you cry. You wrote a book called Rigged. It was about the 2020 election. And there was basically a chapter in it on me. I took up most of a chapter. And when the book came out, my dad was in the hospital nearing the end of his life, and he was not awake. You know, the doctors told us they weren't sure if he could hear. But your book, it just came out, and one of the last things I did was read him that chapter before he died. So I want to let you know that.
I love that. And having had my own father pass a few months ago, I totally understand the significance. But writing about election integrity is difficult because there are so many people who don't understand the problem, or, you know, they'll see something and they think it's wrong, but they don't actually understand what's going on. Having you guide me through what was happening in Pennsylvania and also other election integrity issues in a smart and sane and balanced way was so helpful. So I cannot thank you enough for all your work in that space and helping me.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. And just so you know, Molly, when I feel I'll just echo what you're saying. So we were, you know, I was broadcasting live here during that entire election. That's one of the ways that we got to know each other so well, Linda, because she would text or even call in, and she would explain things, because you have the media narratives, you have people who are questioning in real time what's happening and in a divisive type situation. And so I feel like Linda was our sort of guardian angel just watching that, because we didn't, you know, as Linda would say, you have to be very careful on both sides. You don't want voters to feel like their vote doesn't matter, you know, on either side.
Exactly right. So that's why we have the fan club going.
All right. Well, Molly, I'm one of your fans, and now you wrote this book about Justice Alito, who's a hometown boy. He's from this area. He's from the Philadelphia area. The Philly Fanatic, if people don't realize this, was actually a guest at his welcoming dinner at the Supreme Court. So he's really a true, you know, Pennsylvania, New Jersey guy. So tell us about your new book on Justice Alito.
Well, I'd previously written a book with Carrie Severino on the Kavanaugh confirmation, which got me covering the Supreme Court at more detail. And it just struck me, many people on the court themselves think Justice Alito is this giant on the court, but nobody ever talks about him. He's been there for quite some time. He's just celebrated his 20th anniversary. He's behind some of the most important decisions protecting free speech or freedom of religion. And yet, because he's kind of quiet, nobody talks about him. So I thought, I want to learn more about him, and decided to write it. And I'm thrilled that so many other people also wanted to know about him and why he's so important, why he's distinctive, how he's a conservative who's a little bit different than some of his colleagues, and why that gives him such an outsized role on the court.
And I think these books about Supreme Court justices are so important, because mm-hmm. I find so much that there's like actual hate out there for these people because of their opinions, because of what they write. And when someone like you writes, you know, such an in-depth book about him and his life and everything that he went through and his education and how he grew up, I think it humanizes these people. And I think that that's really important. And I hope that dials down some of this awful, awful, mm-hmm. just, you know, hate that's out there.
Well, one of the issues is that the court was controlled by the left for many decades. It wasn't like Congress or the presidency where it kind of goes back and forth. It just had become something of an activist court. It would get frustrated that people weren't voting for things, and they would just say, well, we found it hidden in the Constitution. And so that lasted for quite a few decades. There was a movement to restore the court to being more judges and less politicians or legislature, and it has succeeded. There is now a majority of the court that self-identifies as originalist, meaning that they attempt to interpret the laws according to their original meaning at the time of passage of the Constitution and statutes as well. And that is producing a more restrained court that's less likely to push left-wing activism than what some people on the left had gotten used to. And they're not handling it well. Whereas the right had handled not being in power for a long time, the left isn't. And so you're seeing threats to attack the court. We had just last week a swatting attempt at Amy Coney Barrett's home. You had the assassination attempt at Brett Kavanaugh's home. A lot of violence, threats, and intimidation, including prominent Democrats saying, we will pack the court unless they start ruling the way we want them to.
And really, your book has a, I think, a fresh perspective on all of this. So you're taking things like, for example, the Dobbs decision and looking at that through a different lens and taking us behind the scenes or behind the headlines, which is, I think, just it's fascinating, Molly. Can you give us a glimpse of that as far as Justice Samuel Alito's his role during that and what he told you?
Well, the Dobbs decision, which overturned Roe v. Wade, was one of these landmark Supreme Court decisions, kind of like Brown v. Board of Education, which overturned Plessy v. Ferguson, which had institutionalized racism in the South. The Roe v. Wade decision, even people who supported abortion, widely viewed it as a bad decision, Ruth Bader Ginsburg among them, and yet it kept on getting upheld decade after decade. Many people thought that it undermine the legitimacy of the court to have such a bad decision, which claimed to have found a hidden right to abortion hidden in the contours of the 14th Amendment. And so Alito was tasked with writing the decision that overturned it. I tell behind the scenes stories about how that went down, how the majority stayed together. I also have some pretty explosive stuff about what the dissenting justices did to delay the decision from being handed down. You might remember there was that leak, which resulted in riots and protests and attacks on 100 churches and pregnancy centers. And the justices who had authored who signed on to Dobbs asked the dissenting justices to please wrap up their dissent, because a decision isn't final usually until it's handed down, both the opinion and the dissent. And they slow walked it. And I have details in the book about how they did that. And during that slow walking, where they intentionally delayed the production of that decision, that was when the Kavanaugh assassination attempt happened.
Wow.
That's crazy.
And with the audiobook, you read that, right? If people get the audiobook. Is that your voice?
I do. I do. And Carrie and I had read the first book that we did together. I didn't read my second book, and so I definitely wanted to read this one, and I'm glad I did. And for some reason, I don't know why, but a lot of people do like to read through audiobooks. So I've been getting a lot of nice feedback on that.
Dawn Stensland from Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
You know, I wanted to ask you, because I've interviewed your husband Mark over the years a lot, but I've never met you before. But, you know, my husband's in the business as well. You guys, you know, have raising two daughters. I just had to ask you a question about, you know, I look at you, it's like, Molly, 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 you're writing this book. You're at the Federalist, Hillsdale College. We see you on Fox News, you know, pretty much every day. How do you time manage? And then because that's a big thing, right? And then two parents in the business and then raising daughters. That's a lot.
Well, Dawn, I don't think I did a very good job with the time management on this one. I was unable to take time off of the other jobs to write this book. So it did take me longer than I usually like to write books as quickly as possible. I know it's going to be painful. It's kind of like, you know, a pregnancy or childbirth. Mm-hmm. The quicker you get it done, you know, it's going to be bad, but the quicker you get it done, the better. But this one took many years. Now, on the bright side, it did enable me to interview nearly 100 people, including most of the justices, tons of federal judges. Being able to look into that Philly background of Justice Alito. He becomes a Phillies fan early. This actually is a huge part of who he is. He believes. He thinks that, you know, most kids growing up where he lived, either became Yankees fans or Phillies fans. And his decision to become a Phillies fan meant that he had to endure. He had to become long-suffering. You know, this was not a championship every year. And it helped give him some resilience. And it also was one of these things where he would come back from games if they lost. He would be so just brokenhearted. And his clerks say that to this day, he'll come back from conference and they can read on his face whether it went well or went poorly. And he was exactly the same as a little kid watching the Phillies play a doubleheader on Sundays.
That is such a great story. And again, that shows that these are just, brilliant people, but regular people just like you and me. And why people think it's okay to threaten and promote violence against them, I'll just never understand what the left is doing on that.
It's something that people who care about rule of law and care about an independent judiciary should be doing much more to combat. I mean, it's insane what some of these attacks have been on judges and justices. You had recently, I think it was some maybe Democrat appointed judges who had been receiving pizza boxes at their home, which is an intimidation tactic because it's saying, we know where you live. And the ABA put out a statement saying how reprehensible this is. And then nothing when Amy Coney Barrett gets a swatting attempt, or nothing about Justice Kavanaugh. You have to have strong pushback. And as left-wing institutions aren't defending rule of law, it's incumbent upon people who do care about it, center, right, whatever, that they do everything possible to defend these people who don't really have, they don't have like a political arm. They don't have a communication shop. They're just getting targeted with no pushback from other people.
I wanted to ask you as well about, when I think about the state of journalism, and I know you've been quoted as talking about that, knowing history and that we need journalism. It's critical to our nation. It's in our Constitution. It's critical to our great republic. But with regard to that, you look at, for example, CBS, Scott Pelley, that whole thing just was announced this morning. We talked about it, I think, in the 6 a.m. hour. But when you think about the state of journalism and what's happening, and then in the perspective of the 250th birthday, if you will, of our country, how do you see it from your lens as an award-winning journalist?
Well, these are not great times. Obviously, the media situation could not be worse, and Scott Pelley is a perfect example of that. This unearned arrogance after decades of being one of the most highly paid propagandists out there, deceptively, manipulatively editing videos to push a left-wing narrative. And still, the media have way too much power. Mm-hmm. It's good that people are recognizing the problems with left-wing media, but they still get so much opportunity to control the terms of the debate. And among the things they're doing is having taught people for decades to hate their own country. And that does cause problems when we're celebrating the 250th. There are people, first of all, through the math, uncontrolled migration issues, the failure to assimilate, and then also just indoctrinating in kids for decades, for generations now, a hatred of their country. You can feel the difference between this celebration this year and what we had, in 1976 or even in 1984 when we had the Los Angeles Olympics, a severe decline in patriotism. And that does threaten the republic. But all you can do is just do your duty, keep educating people. I have something in the book about how Alito definitely is the justice who's least likely to think, oh, we had a good decision, so everything's going well. He seems most likely to understand the country is not in good shape. But what do? You do your work, you do your duty, and you pray for that remnant of people to be ready when opportunity strikes.
Beautifully said. I did want to ask you, since you're looking within the court, going beyond the headlines and having this rare inside look, did you find or do you feel there's a difference within, because we have some new justices, I've enjoyed hearing the stories over the years about, for example, Justice Sotomayor, her friendship with Justice Clarence Thomas, for example, and that many of the justices have a warmth and a friendship and a deep respect for each other. Did you find, Molly, as your, obviously your focus is on Justice Alito, but that there are some changes within the court?
Yes and no. I mean, this is probably the best court that the country has ever seen in terms of the quality of the people on the court. There is one very notable exception to that in terms of how well-regarded Ketanji Brown Jackson is by the country, by her colleagues. She's talking a lot, not adding a lot to the discussion, and she's been involved in some inappropriate comments about the court that are not backed up by reality. And I would also point out Sonia Sotomayor recently had to apologize when she lambasted Brett Kavanaugh publicly. traditionally, you're supposed to keep your insults and all of that to your written opinions and your dissents and your concurrences, not publicly speaking to undermine the integrity of the court. The right has done that for decades. They've had much more experience. The left is struggling. They're lashing out publicly. And as some of their antics have gotten talked about, like what I just said, the delaying a decision for political gain, and that happened again this year. They delayed that Voting Rights Act redistricting case, Calais, for political gain. They thought if they could delay that decision in long enough, the left justices, that they could affect the midterm elections. It's inappropriate to delay for political gain. And it also was, you know, it was something where Ketanji Brown Jackson was accusing the other side of being political when they had held on to that decision since October. These things do weaken some of the camaraderie. They're still pretty good, and they try to be. These are nine people who have to work together until, you know, for a very long period of time. It's only nine of them. But I do think the leak, the post-leak behavior, and the disparity in treatment of the justices has caused some problems.
And Molly, isn't Justice Alito the exact opposite, really, of Justice Jackson? Because he is wielding enormous power, but he's quiet. You don't see him giving outside speeches and politicizing anything. He just uses his writing and his legal analysis to really make great, great changes in our law.
Well, another way they differ is that in oral argument. So oral argument, you know, each side gets a half hour to present their case, and they're asked questions by the justices. Alito and Kagan are the two best at this, at guiding the advocate who they agree with to higher ground, punching holes in the advocate who they disagree with, his or her argument. Whereas Ketanji Brown Jackson has been kind of mocked for how ineffective she is in oral argument. She doesn't seem to think about how to persuade her colleagues. She frequently asks questions that betray her ignorance on topics. And so that is another way they differ.
And people are talking, are one of these justices going to retire before you know, Trump finishes this term? Have you heard anything on that?
Well, we've heard from Alito's chambers and Thomas's chambers that they are not retiring at the end of this term. And that would match with my understanding as well. I still think it's possible. It's unlikely, but possible there will be a retirement. Chief Justice John Roberts is also in his 70s. He's the second longest serving justice on the court after Thomas. And Thomas beats him by like 15 years. But Thomas is the outlier in terms of how long he's been serving. So you know, I would not hold my breath for a retirement, but it's still possible.
You know, I just don't know how we got here 250 years on. I don't think our founders ever envisioned that whether a Supreme Court justice retires or who gets nominated is going to capture the nation like this. That was not how the court was built, I don't think. I don't think the founders ever intended it to have this type of power that the left seems to want to give it.
In fact, the founders wrote repeatedly about how this would be the least significant branch. They said it doesn't have the power of the sword. It doesn't have the power of the purse. It will be the least important. That was in the Federalist Papers. And yet, in part because the court kind of seized for itself more power many, 200 years ago there. And because of the failures, I would say primarily of the first article branch of Congress, the court has gotten more important. It's not healthy. It's not good. Now, one thing you can say about this current court, for all of the hatred from the left and the media about this court, they're frequently making decisions that simply say, this isn't our purview. We're not going to pretend to invent a right to abortion, for instance. This is handled by the people through their legislatures, or we're not going to settle this dispute. This is really for Congress to settle. And that type of humility will help in the long term, forcing Congress, for instance, with the Chevron deference cases, which now say, Congress, you can't just outsource all your decision making to the executive branch. You have to make some decisions here, too. And as those decisions get put into place and practiced, I think that will help in the long term.
Yeah, right. I love that perspective. You know, don't you? I mean, that's what you just said, Molly, is it's such a critical perspective, because the reason that the executive branch is forced, for example, to try to solve problems is because Congress, they're not doing their jobs. And I love that you just mentioned that as an aside, but it's such a great point.
Dawn Stensland from Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
And I think this goes back to the media too, Molly, because I don't know if the media really educates the public. Just because the Supreme Court, you know, turns something down or says this isn't our purview, it doesn't mean one side won or lost. And it seems like the media is so important in making it about wins or losses. And then the left really, you know, hangs on to that. And that's just not how the founders saw our court.
Oh, Linda, the failure of the media to report honestly and accurately is a huge problem here. So we're coming up on, I think, the fourth anniversary of the Dobbs decision being handed down. The media treated this like an apocalyptic event that would lead to the complete and immediate banning of abortion, right? And, you know, cards on the table, I am pro-life. I would love a place where unborn children are not killed. That would be a great, you know, I would love to have such a scenario. That is in no way what the Dobbs decision said. Mm-hmm. Many people would have liked if it would have said that. It didn't come close to saying that. It said merely, we can't pretend that there's a right hidden in the Constitution that's not there. It was exhaustive. It went through all the history in the country, understanding of the laws to say, we can't do this thing that is a lie. But because of that, that means the people can handle it themselves. And people have been handling it themselves. Some states protect unborn life at an earlier stage than other states. And do the media go back and say, man, we really did a disservice by lying about this? No, because they thought if we get people frustrated, that might help our political party in the midterm elections that are coming up, you know, that year in 2022. And so they thought the ends justified the means. But it is a dereliction of journalistic duty to lie to people about the outcomes of decisions or to treat every decision as political when, in fact, these justices really are trying to look at the law, what it says, and what that means that a decision should be.
Yeah,
I see that.
I actually just saw an ad on TV for, I don't even remember what, I think it was a congressional primary race, but they talked about this person was going to protect the woman's right to abortion. I mean, the left is still talking about it.
Oh, yeah.
Just
it's crazy.
Yeah, it's their issue.
I wanted to ask about, and this is when you talk about journalistic integrity, bias by omission. I was just looking through your social media, and I'd forgotten about this, Molly. It was the New York Times, you said, ran about 70 stories on Mrs. Alito's distress flag. Remember that? And they claimed that it had to do with J6ers. But you were showing, I believe it was Yosemite. I don't know if we have that. Thank you, Dan Borowski's putting it up. That the Yosemite employees were also putting that flag up. It's just a great post and one of those ways that you're calling out, you know, media malpractice.
Oh, or how about they got very mad. They were trying, there was a political campaign targeting Justice Alito. The left has long recognized his importance in ways that the right took a while to catch up on. And so various left-wing media outlets were trying to get him to recuse from various cases during the Biden administration. So they started targeting his wife. She loves to fly flags. She's a very New Jersey, someone who loves Jersey and loves to fly flags at their beach property there. She had flown an Appeal to Heaven flag, which was commissioned by George Washington by his naval secretary or something like this. And it has that pine tree with the words Appeal to Heaven. And the New York Times lied and claimed this was an insurrectionist symbol. Now, they knew that wasn't true, but one of the things I thought was funny about it was that San Francisco had flown that flag for, I think, like 50 or 60 years. But on the day that the New York Times said that this is a flag you're not allowed to fly because we're going to war against the Alitos, they removed the flag that they had flown for decades. So, and yes, an upside down flag is a sign of distress. They once again said that she had done this as sort of like to side with insurrectionists. And in fact, it had to do with a neighborhood dispute. And they were told that and they lied in their coverage of that as well.
It's ridiculous. I see that you collect vinyl records. Linda Kearns loves Elvis. I don't know if you have any Elvis records or what music you love, but I did check that out. And I had to ask the question.
So I have, I think, one better. I do have thousands of vinyl records, and we do have some Elvis, but I will be singing at the Grand Ole Opry on August 15th, which I got to do last year as well. singing some Elvis tunes. I'm a backup singer, but I like to pretend that I am starring at the Grand Ole Opry. But I'll be singing backup for the Wagoneers, which is a great, great rockabilly band that's on the charts right now. And so I'm excited about that.
And you did this last year?
Did it last year as well. So I'll be a two-time Grand Ole Opry star. I noticed they don't have a definition for what makes a Grand Ole Opry star, so I'm just taking that and running with it.
I might have to take a trip to Nashville.
Hey, you should. It is so much fun. It is so great to be at the Opry. August 15th.
Hey, Molly, we have a bunch of friends in common, obviously, but someone texted me this morning that you have a little hobby of being a matchmaker. So if I know the young, nice conservatives who are looking for a nice girlfriend or boyfriend in D.C., should we send them your way?
Well, I do it nationwide. I'm Lutheran, so I primarily do it for my fellow Lutherans because I love marriage and I love my husband. I'm very happy that I found him. And so I just like to share it with other people. But I will take any and all names. I only work with marriage-minded people, but happy to do that if you know of any people who are...
Do you have any marriages?
Yeah, we want to, you know...
Oh, I have at least 16. I was going
Wow.
to, I know, yeah. Oh, I'm good at it. But I was going to add up all my children now. And I used to tell people, you don't have to pay me. You just have to name your firstborn after me. And they would always laugh like I was joking. But one beautiful couple did in fact name a daughter after me. So there's a little Molly out there as well.
Oh, that is so sweet. That's amazing.
And you know,
anyone can do it. Everybody should do it. If you know good people, you should help them match up because that's the best source. And it used to be so much easier to meet people and there were institutions and organizations to do it. And now I think people should just look out for their friends. You know, if they're marriage minded, not everybody is. And if they're interested, just do what you can.
Well, Molly, you're like a one-woman like machine that's going to fix America. Because I always say, like, if people would just graduate from high school, get an alarm clock, get a job, get married, and have children, like, in that order and not deviate, imagine how great America would be. So you're already on the bandwagon.
I love it. Yeah, no, that's exactly right, Linda. And that's exactly, you know, and people could use some help, too. So with all of those things. But it is true, and you even see this in the, it gets political. You look at how married women vote relative mm-hmm. to single women. Single women are overwhelming. They're like the base of the Democrat Party, and then married women are solidly Republican, like just a slight majority who vote that way. And you see that when women aren't married, they do find Democratic Party policies more attractive. And so there's this incentive to keep women single, and an incentive to teach them to dislike men. And that's not healthy for anyone. It leads to long-term unhappiness if you don't love and appreciate men, too.
So you, not only are you writing these books, you're editing The Federalist, you're talking on Fox News, you're also just fixing, you know, the family values in America. And you're singing at the Opry. Singing. Is there anything you can't do?
Are you singing?
Apparently... keep my house in order. I would say, like, I definitely need to, like, hang some window treatments right now. But yeah.
Well, maybe you'll be singing at the 250th. We had, you know, Brett Michaels drop out. I don't know. Next, we'll see Molly and the group. I don't know. Coming up.
Well, I really wish that both America 250 and Freedom 250 had done better job of planning for some proper celebrations. It is such a wonderful opportunity to revisit what it means to be an American, what our ideals are, who we are as a people, and I'm not pleased with that. So hopefully we'll come together on our own to have some good celebrations.
Yeah, back a few years ago, then Senator Toomey had appointed me to a U.S. 250 commission here in Pennsylvania, and honestly, I had to resign along with the other conservative because all the meetings were about how this was the opportunity for the apology tour for America for all of our wrongs. And I kept saying, we're planning a birthday party for the best country in the history of the world. This is not an apology tour. But I think I think that kind of took over, at least on the left.
Well, and we've even seen some well-funded, well-organized campaigns that are overtly saying we don't want to celebrate this 250-year history because it's a history of racism and sexism, and instead we should talk about what we can do in the next 250 years to advance progressivism. That wow. is no way to celebrate this, obviously.
No. Amazing. Do you have any other books in you're thinking about writing? Should we look forward to anything else?
I'm in the phase, with this having just come out, of thinking I will never write another book. But I will say that I am just so happy with how well it's gone. When you write, it's so lonely, and you're thinking, am I the only person interested in this? And the fact that it immediately made the bestseller lists and that there are so many people interested in it, I'm just thrilled, because it makes me feel like all that time and effort and energy and all that was time well spent.
Well, I'm sure our audience really yes. appreciates it, especially because he is a Pennsylvania, New Jersey guy. I mean, he's one of us here. A native son to be very proud of. Went to Princeton. I think you make the point that he's a non-elitist with an elitist education. So he's really kind of a unicorn in that respect.
Right. Many people, when they go to Ivy League schools or they get prestigious jobs like he's had throughout his career, they become one of the left. And in part because when he went to Princeton, he didn't actually respect the rich kids so much. And they were rioting and they were shutting down classes. And he knew that the rich kids, they just go work for their dads anyway, whereas he's trying to get an education. Right. So he never wanted to impress them because he didn't find them particularly impressive himself. And this is something that is also good for people who want to have a solid core to themselves. Think about who you're trying to impress and why. And why do you want the love of, say, the left-wing media or this elite institution? Do you respect them? If so, why? And is that a problem for yourself?
Molly Hemingway, the book is Alito, the Justice Who Reshaped the Supreme Court, Restored the Constitution by... the one and only Molly Hemingway. It was a real honor to chat with you, and thank you, Linda. We're in the Linda. I'm in the Linda and the Molly fan club.
Molly, thank you so much, Molly, and I hope to see you soon.
Thanks, y'all. Take care.
Thank
Bye.
You. That was awesome. Thank you,
I was
you,
able to
Linda.
Grab a picture of Molly.
Singing?
Well, I looked everywhere for video of it. It would have been fantastic.
I know.
Right?
That's why I was like scanning social
media. A social media post from Monty Warden, who was the person that she sang with.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow. Look.
You can see her singing.
That is at the Opry. It's so adorable. It says the Opry. Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
So that was last year. So it's August 15th this year. I don't know. We should do a road trip.
She must go to the Dawn Stensland School of how to fit 10 lives in one and then not appear tired, because I don't know how she handles all this.
I know. It's... you look at her, everything she's doing, and, you know, it's not like nothing against cookbooks, but it's not like she wrote a cookbook. This is this book yeah. was extensive, to do 100 interviews and on Justice Alito, no less, and get all of that in there. And then also she's, an adjunct, Hillsdale adjunct professor. She's, got a whole family, a whole day job at Fox. I mean, the Federalist. It's pretty incredible.
She is.
Wow. Superwoman. Well, we'll continue on with our Superwoman, Linda. We have a lot to talk about. It was primary day across the country, and I want to ask Linda about some of the stories that I know we talked about it very early this morning, maybe between 6 and 7:30, but we'll revisit that and update those numbers for you as well on the big primary day. All the breaking news. Stay right here.
The cons booked the flight.
Oh, jeez.
Crossed the water, took the light.
Dawn Stensland from Talk Radio 1210, WPHT.
You've heard me talk about my guys, Marvin E. Cann's Heating and Air Conditioning, veteran founded. They truly live by the motto, freedom is not free. Supporters of our Travis Manion Foundation All Day Thon and fundraisers. So as you know, we're hitting 90 today. Heat wave toward the end of this week. Yeah, AC season is here. So call my guys, Marvin E. Cann's, for your AC tune-up. But if you do need new equipment, Marvin E. Cann's will donate $100 to TMF, Travis Manion Foundation, $100 to Travis Manion Foundation for every new installation. Proud installers of Train, TRANE. It's hard to stop a train. Go to MarvinEcans.com. That's Marvinee, KANZE.com, MarvinEcans.com. Tell them Dolan sent you. Linda Kearns and I, well, we might not sing, but maybe we'll sing on our way. We'll take a road trip August 15th. Go see Molly. Grand Ole Opry.
And I don't know if you recognize that bumper music, but that was my buddy G-Love.
G-Love.
You know, I made the conscious decision to play that over that guy in Dubai coming back.
Enough with AI music. You're taking away from actual singer-songwriters, yeah, Dan. Come on.
You got me when you said that Garrett
was
married.
Yeah, do you want to... Maybe we'll find an AI producer. What do you think of that?
See what a smart lawyer she is, though. That guy. I don't know. Maybe the former first lady should go to Dubai.
Oh.
Sell her book there.
Like... This apology tour, or I don't know what it is, this explanation tour. Well, I can't predict the future, but I can pretty much say for sure we're not going to see Melania doing that.
Yes. Amen. Well, first of all, would Melania Trump ever be invited by the ladies, I say loosely, ladies at The View? Would she ever get that invitation? Has she ever had that invitation?
I don't know if they've ever invited her, but Dawn, that's a hallmark of the left. They only want to be interviewed by people who are not challenging them at all. Like the AOC, she's never sat down for an interview with someone who's actually challenged her. And I think that was part of Harris's problem in the last election. Even when she was practically fed the questions and she really couldn't answer anything that was even slightly challenging. And, you know, they're going to have to learn that if you know, they want to capture the heart of the American people.
Yeah. And yesterday, The Washington Post had that article, what Jill Biden's book says about Melania, the East Wing, and that debate, Barron Trump, etc. So, you know, it's amazing how they're all working together to help her sell her book as well.
Yeah. And I think she wrote how the car ride over to the inauguration, it was like a little frosty. Well, I mean, you know, how many times had Trump been through an assassination attempt? And what were the Democrats saying about him all throughout the campaign? Like, what's she supposed to do? Just sit there in the ride over to the inauguration and act like that wasn't happening? I mean, what did Joe Biden expect?
Yeah. No, it's well put. What was your take? I haven't had a chance to ask you about this. What was your take on her reaction, for example, saying that when Joe Biden, you know, during that famous debate, it just had, I don't know, lost it or whatever, but lost his, oh, you want to, let's take a look and then we'll
have. Do you want the View clip? I have the View clip queued up.
No, I'm asking about the debate first. So, Linda, what was your take on that when Jill Biden said she thought her husband was having a stroke?
Well, I'm not a doctor like Dr. Jill Biden, but I think the protocol from watching ER and what's that other one? Grey's Anatomy. If you're having a stroke, you only have a few minutes to act. So you call 911. You get a real medical doctor. You don't sit there and say, "Oh, I wonder if my husband is having a stroke there on stage." If you really think that, you do something about it. So clearly, you know, she made that up afterwards to try to, I don't know, explain herself. And she's not even fact checking her own, you know, her own stories.
Crazy. So Dan had a clip of her being asked about that again on The View.
Dr. Biden, I read the whole book in a day. You have so many fascinating stories. It's excellent. But one of the big revelations out of it was your reaction watching the now infamous 2024 presidential debate.
Yeah.
And you described it on CBS saying you thought he might be having a stroke or a medical incident. I was covering it for CNN. I know it was hard for a lot of us to watch. Mm. But you say and write that you hadn't seen that from him before. You hadn't seen that sort of slippage. Many aides had said otherwise, and of course, you know, polls of Americans had expressed concerns about his age, perhaps not that performance. Do you think that there's a chance you had a blind spot to it as the person closest to him and to his spouse who just loves him so much?
You know, you're saying many aides saw this. No one ever came to me and said, Jill, you know, Joe's aging or something's wrong. So when I saw that, I mean, no doctors came to me and said that. And Joe, like I said, you said, has a full team of doctors around him. And so when I saw that, when all Americans saw that moment on TV at the debate, I mean, I was frightened out of my mind because I thought, oh, my God, he's having a stroke. And then I got off the stage. I went back. You know, they brought me back on. You know, we hugged, we kissed. We're walking off. And I see he's okay, but we're walking off, and he says to me, I'm not going to say it on morning TV, but I really
We all know Joe Biden. We know what he said. Okay. Yeah.
I really messed up, didn't I? And I said, yeah, Joe, you did. Yeah. And we walked off. I went to get my stuff. The docs were right there. They're like, he's fine. He's fine. We had three events after that.
Yeah.
Three that night where he got up on stage and, you know, made speeches, whatever. And to this day, I still cannot say, like, what happened in that moment?
Wow.
Dawn, she's lying. Dawn, the entire country was talking about his cognitive ability going into that debate. And the White House was putting out remember they were saying he's best between 10 and 3 and they don't mm-hmm. have things after 3 or 4 in the afternoon. Everyone was talking about his cognitive abilities and what she was waiting for an aide to come to her, what she wasn't watching TV or looking at any of the news or anything, and she was waiting for an aide to say, hey, I think that your husband has some cognitive abilities. That was going on for years before that. Where was she?
Maybe that's the question. Was she really spending that much time with her husband?
Or watching TV? I mean, we all knew.
She watching The View? I don't know. Dan has this clip of, this is President Trump. We've been playing all morning this Miranda Devine interview, newly released with President Trump. Trump was actually asked about it.
Well, people saw him before the debate and he was fine. I wouldn't say it was Winston Churchill, but he was fine. He was all right.
He went to a Waffle House that night.
Yeah.
Waffle House.
I mean, so she said he had a stroke, but why would she bring him to a Waffle House? If you had a stroke.
Would your wife have allowed you to go off to a Waffle House if she thought you were having a stroke?
Even in good times, she would. You know, although I would, actually. It's not so bad. But it was an amazing evening, actually. I walked in. He was very white. You know, did you notice the makeup or something? But they hired a very expensive makeup artist who really liked white powders. Then he was on the white side because I walked in. And for some reason, they introduced him. So it's like a boxing match. You always introduce the champion, the one that's higher rated. He was the president. I wasn't. I thought I was going to be, but I wasn't. And I was waiting to go first, and they introduced him first, which was very unusual. And when I went up, I looked at him, and I said, he's so white. You know, that was the big thing. I said, what happened to him? But he didn't. It was not a good debate performance. But I think
So that was interesting. You know what all he thought about? What that whole thing was, his wife took him to Waffle House. That's all he thought. I would kill for Waffle House, right? I love Waffle House. I do.
The best part of that debate was when Trump said, I don't know what he just said, and I don't think he knows either. I mean, I think he just encapsulated what the entire country was thinking at that time, and he just came out with it. And that was just so true. But Jill going around with this story, she's just not being honest. And I think that's what, unfortunately, we've come to expect from the left.
Would your wife have allowed you to go off to a Waffle House if she thought you were having a stroke?
Even in good times.
Donald, you do not know. You know that she's like, mm-mm. By the way, what Jill wrote at the Washington Post in their article said Melania Trump. Jill details only a few interactions with Melania Trump, but after the attempt on Trump's life in Butler, PA, during the 2024 campaign, Jill says in her book, she called Melania to say she was thinking of her and Barron, the youngest Trump child, and that Melania was, quote, polite and controlled as ever. That's kind of a cold little piece of documentation that she wants to put out there, that she called Melania, but she was polite and controlled as ever. So I don't know.
I think Joe Biden has a little bit of a credibility problem, because if anyone's going to say now that they was watching their husband have a stroke on stage and not doing anything about it, well, I mean, now I think we have to wonder what if anything she's saying is true.
Yeah, I would agree.
I do like her jacket, though. I mean, I think her jacket looks nice.
Oh, Dan did not like that. He was poking a little fun.
You never
at
wear that, Linda. Come on.
Well, no, that's not me, but
and Dawn, you would wear that, would you?
No.
No, but she's her own fashion sense. I mean, you know, some of the stuff Melania wears I don't like, but it looks nice on her.
Okay.
You know? So
Well, I mean, it's a great jacket if you're trying to do, it's like camouflage in a
grandmother's living room.
Yeah.
All right, different strokes for different folks, I guess.
It's like the white jacket with the flowers.
And I also heard her say on another talk show that he's still going, taking Amtrak to D.C.
Yes.
Every day. Is she lying? Because what, is the whole entire Secret Service getting on Amtrak?
No.
I mean, is she lying? Like, seriously.
I hope so.
Why would he be taking Amtrak? I think that would be very...
elder abuse?
Well...
Because he'd get lost.
I'm more thinking about the inconvenience of the people who actually have to take Amtrak to work. Like, why bother them with all that nonsense?
I love him.
You know, he's doing okay, as probably everyone in this audience knows, because I'm sure you've all been touched by cancer.
Yeah. Yes.
It's hard. It's hard. You know, it's stage 4. It's in his bones. But he's keeping up his schedule. He's going to D.C. Mm-hmm. on Amtrak. What else?
Yes.
Stage 4 cancer in his bones? And he's... Yeah, I would love to know if that's true.
I mean, how many Secret Service men does somebody like him have? They must have a whole team. And they're all getting on the Amtrak with him? What, taking up a whole car? And then what, making everybody else wait? That's not fair. I mean, people actually have to go to work.
Yeah, that's not fair to anybody.
No.
It's true.
No.
Linda Kearns, what a fun day today. Thank you so much, my friend. The Dom Giordano Show is next, and there's so much going on, including this big court case that we learned our local attorney icon, George Paquetta, was in on the call. The Dom Giordano Show is coming up now.
The Dom Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT and the Free Odyssey app.